How's everyone doing today? Good. In case I want to get lazy a little bit. I'm getting lazy. Like Matt said, today is called Demo Day. And just to kind of give you a little bit of an idea of what we have going on through the summer. So we've said that this is kind of the beginning of a series of series, which sounds kind of weird, but we're doing one main overarching series throughout the entire summer called Building. But we're breaking it down because building a building takes times. There's steps, there's processes. So we're going to be talking about what it looks like to build the kingdom of God in practical ways. So today we have a kind of a standalone message called Demo Day. Next week we'll be starting a message group of series. It's kind of hard to explain. Like, if you guys can figure out a better way for me to explain this, that would be great, because I can't. It's up here, but it's not coming out here. But next week, we're going to be starting a series of messages that we're going to call Blueprint. So if you know anything about the building process, the blueprint is the plan. It's like the written out, drawn plan of what you're building. So we're going to be talking about the blueprint of the kingdom of God. Any guesses on what that might be? Wow, you guys are awake. Good job. The Bible. We're going to be talking about the Bible. How about that? In church, we're going to talk about the Bible. All right, so we're going to be looking at these practical ways. Now, last week, we had kind of another standalone message, and we called it just, it was kind of like a vision message. It was a building plan. So if you missed that and you have questions about who we are as an organization, why we got started, because we're just a little over a year old, if you want have questions about what Project Community is or what Project Church is, this is a great place to start. And then you can follow up with questions with us. We're more than happy to answer all your questions and talk way too long about it. So today is Demo Day. Now, it's kind of weird thinking about starting a series called Building by talking about demolition, right? But sometimes we have to go through the messy process of tearing down the old so we can build something new. So our experiences, our knowledge, our relationships, and our culture, they all work together to shape the way that we see the world. But what if we learn to look first from a kingdom perspective rather than our worldview? So my hope with the message today is that it challenges us to question why we believe what we believe. And it encourages us to adopt a kingdom mindset. So let's break down our pre-built worldview and start at ground level so we can build a really solid foundation. So first things first, what is a worldview? I'm going to talk a lot today about worldview. Simply put, it's our view of the world. Seems pretty self-defined, right? It's built from our experiences, our culture, our education, our society, our family, our relationships. Everything around us builds our unique worldview. No two worldviews are the exact same. So that seems kind of obvious, right? Like your worldview is the way that you view the world. But let's look deeper. Is anybody ready to get just a little nerdy today? You guys know I like to get nerdy. Okay, so one of the first classes that I took when I started my anthropological degree or whatever, I can't even say it right. That's not a good start. There was this class, and it's called Epistemological Insights for Anthropological Practice. It's a mouthful, right? It's kind of a lot. And when I looked at the title, I was just like, I made a bad mistake. But I started looking up because I had no idea what epistemology meant. Do you guys know what it means? Have you guys heard that word? Not a clue? Okay, good. That makes me feel better. Because I had no idea what it was. But what it is it's a branch of philosophy that deals with the theories of knowledge. Now, I very quickly fell in love with the study of epistemology. And if you do a quick Google search, it's going to say that epistemology is the investigation of what distinguishes justified belief from opinion. So basically, it's the process of determining why you believe something. So here's the cool part. I think it's cool. You guys may roll your eyes. For my final project for this class, we had to draw what my professor, he coined the phrase, epistograph. It is a visual depiction of what I imagined the human conceptual system to look like. Are you guys asleep yet? Good. I have pictures. So I had to draw a picture of what I imagined people's thought processes to look like where you got your ideas, why you believe what you believe. And I'm not going to go into all the details, but I wanted to give you just a visual to kind of think back on as I talk today. So I love trees, so I drew mine like a tree. So it's going to be kind of hard to read all the details and stuff from back where you're sitting. So I'm going to kind of point out a couple things. Now, I'm not going to go through all of the different steps of this. And isn't my squirrel cute? He was a bonus. I thought he was cute. So my professor probably rolled his eyes, but whatever. So it's not a turkey. It's not a turkey. Micah the art critic, thanks. So what I wanted to show you this for is because I wanted to point out a few things. So at the middle of the tree, we have faith. Faith is the core of our structure. It's what holds us up straight. Belief and knowledge are the roots, and they're rooted in our experience. As we experience things, our knowledge and our belief grow deeper into what we experience. We are shaped by our tradition or our culture. So we've got the wind. The wind blows. It shapes us. It can mold us. Have you guys ever seen a tree that's like kind of leans a little bit? Maybe it was shaped a little bit too much by a strong wind. We are shaped by our tradition or our culture. We are fed by our society, our social paradigm up here, the cloud, the rain. It feeds us. It gives us nourishment. It's what keeps us growing. We grow toward our spiritual awareness, the sun, the light. You ever seen a plant, and every few days you might have to turn it a little bit toward the window because it's like all growing toward the window? Have you guys ever grown sunflowers? They always turn toward the sun. In the morning, they're like this way, and then they're this way by the evening. Because we grow toward our spiritual awareness. And it is our worldview, the trunk of the tree, that out of our worldview, our reason, our logic, interpretation, perspective, and understanding of everything in the world grows out of that, grows out of our worldview. We can live our entire lives forming our beliefs and opinions based solely on our worldview. But what happens when we are exposed to something that challenges our core faith? Something that we can't reconcile inside of us because it's just so different than everything that our worldview has taught us. We have two options. Do we chop down the tree or do we start to grow in a different direction? We're going to look at Acts chapter 7. So in Acts 7, we read this beautiful message of faith being spoken by a man named Stephen. Now, Stephen was speaking to a group of people called the Sanhedrin. Now, the Sanhedrin, they're a council of Jewish leaders, and they were given a measure of authority and autonomy by the Roman government to rule over the Jews. These were the people that plotted to have Jesus killed. So, Stephen is giving them a speech about why he believes in Jesus. So, Stephen calls them things like stiff-necked people. Think that went over well? And he accuses them of receiving the law but not obeying it. So how did they respond? They drug him out of the city gates and they stoned him to death. And we read in Acts 7, and Saul approved of their killing him. So who's Saul? What do we know about Saul? Now, Saul is a man of strong belief and conviction. He's from a wealthy Jewish family. He grew up in Jerusalem, and he was deeply embedded into the Jewish culture and tradition there. He was taught Hebrew law from an early age, and when he grew up, he became a member of a group called the Pharisees. Now, the Pharisees were an elite group of Jewish leaders that were separate from the masses. So they were kind of a branch above. And they were kind of, they're known for being responsible for the transforming of Judaism from a religion of sacrifice to a religion of law. They're very big into laws. They believed that law was the only way to God. They were kind of known as progressives of their day because when a new teaching would come along or something in their culture would come along, they would kind of adopt new ideas and they would adapt the laws to kind of fit into their worldview. And they opposed Jesus because he refused to accept their interpretations of the law. And this group was not opposed to engaging in violence to subdue those that stood against them. So here's Saul, wealthy Jewish man, powerful convictions based on his culture and his religious education and social experience. And he was on a mission to arrest and persecute anyone claiming to be a follower of Jesus. So based on his worldview, he believed with every fiber of his being that it was his responsibility as one of God's children to preserve the Jewish culture and religion by putting an end to those that challenge the traditional ways. Now that seems kind of weird to us, doesn't it? Like, he believed, he was convinced that that was his responsibility, his religious responsibility was to put an end to those that follow Jesus. In Acts 9, we read that, meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. God, he was just grumbling. He was spitting out all kinds of hate toward these people because he knew the truth. He knew who God was. He knew how to reach God. So he went to the high priest and he asked them for letters to the synagogues in Damascus so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, which is what they called Jesus' followers, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. So he was given blank arrest papers. He was given the authority to go out and arrest those that were following Jesus. And he set out to rid the city of Damascus of anyone considered to be polluting the Jewish religion. In verse 3, it says, as he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and he heard a voice say to him, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? He said, who are you, Lord? Notice he said, Lord, because he immediately knew that the voice speaking to him was speaking with the authority of God. I am Jesus whom you are persecuting, he replied. Now get up, go into the city, and you will be told what you must do. You know, a blinding light and a voice from heaven would kind of get your attention. In a moment, Saul was met face to face with something that went against everything that he had always known. And he had to do something about it. You know, this is a well-known story, but this was just the beginning point of his conversion. See, Saul immediately understood that Jesus was the real deal, but it took time for Saul the Pharisee to become Paul the Apostle. So I want to look at what Paul wrote in a letter to Galatians about this moment, about his conversion experience. In Galatians chapter 1, verse 11, it says, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that the gospel I preached is not of human origin. I did not receive it from any man, nor was I taught it. Rather, I received it by revelation from Jesus Christ. For you have heard of my previous way of life in Judaism, how intensely I persecuted the church of God and tried to destroy it. I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my own age among my people and was extremely zealous for the traditions of my fathers. But when God, who set me apart from my mother's womb and called me by his grace, was pleased to reveal his son in me so that I might preach him among the Gentiles, my immediate response was not to consult any human being. I did not go to Jerusalem to see those who were apostles before I was, but I went to Arabia. And then later, I returned to Damascus. See, Paul had been extremely zealous for the traditions of his fathers. His beliefs, his convictions, his way of life was completely and totally formed by his culture. He was just doing what he had known to do. But when a new revelation opened his eyes and a new truth that was incompatible with all that he had known came face to face with him, he knew he had to go through the process of breaking it down and questioning all of his beliefs in order to build his life with Christ as the cornerstone. But you know, this process, it takes time and it takes commitment to grow in your relationship with God. And for Paul, it required him to take time away from the influence of others so that he could hear directly from God. You know, we don't really talk very much about this process for Paul. We just know him that he was a murderer, he murdered Christians, and then whoop, now he's writing all these letters and he's like the authority on who Jesus was. But that time in between, we don't talk a whole lot about that. But it says in Galatians 1:18, then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to get acquainted with Cephas, or Peter, and I stayed with him for 15 days. I saw none of the other apostles, only James, the Lord's brother. I assure you before God that what I am writing to you is no lie. Before beginning his ministry, 3 years, he took 3 years and went to Arabia, which is a desert, by the way, to rebuild his faith. He had to break it down and rebuild it. He had to let go of what he once believed to be the absolute truth that was based on his culture and his religion to be able to accept the new reality that he had come face to face with. You know, there's a popular term that's used today for this process, and it's almost become like a trendy thing to go through it. It's called deconstruction. Have you guys heard of someone going through the process of deconstructing their faith? Now, it's almost a controversial thing now to hear this term. Some people are for it, some people are against it. We'll see where you guys land by the end of today. But see, even though it's kind of a trendy thing to go through the process of deconstructing your faith, you have to be willing to also deconstruct your worldview along with it. If you don't, then you just might rebuild your faith in your own image or in the image of your society rather than in the image of God. So here's my opinion on why deconstruction has become such a hot topic in the Western church. See, if you guys grew up kind of like I did in the South, I know that most of you have had some sort of influence from the church, either directly or indirectly. And typically, you're not really encouraged to ask questions about what you're being taught. See, asking questions can easily be perceived as doubting God. But when your faith is based on believing what you're told rather than formed through a balance of experience, knowledge, and relationships, it can lack that strong foundation. You know, it makes me think of this picture of a house built on stilts. You've seen these, like, on the ocean. They're built over water like this, and it serves a purpose. It's for, you know, flooding and all that stuff. But it doesn't really give me much feeling of stability. Like, I wouldn't live there. It makes me nervous. It makes me think that maybe when a wave comes crashing in, that maybe it might just, like, tip over. If your faith is a house on stilts that gets hit by a giant new wave of information, do you have the right tools to repair it? Or will you be vulnerable for the next wave? Will it break you down even further? You know, without being encouraged and taught to ask questions about what you believe, it's easy to just give up altogether and let the house just be washed away. It's easier to give up on your faith than to try to withstand the challenges that's going to come against it. So me and Matt have a friend that, well, I know him through Matt. Him and Matt go back a long ways. They grew up in church together. And this friend, he's worked in churches. He was a powerful worship leader. Loved watching him lead worship. Incredibly talented. But a few years ago, there's something that happened in his life. Something that he could not reconcile. He could not understand. And instead of leaning into God and allowing him to comfort him through it, he started to blame God for it. And recently, we have another friend that made a post on Facebook about going through his own process of deconstruction. And this friend, he commented on it. And he said, "I didn't just deconstruct. I lit a fire to the existing structure and then brought in a wrecking ball to demolish the rest. Then I ground it all up into powder and I blew it into the wind." The result was not the deconstruction of his faith. It was the destruction of it. So what's the difference in deconstruction and destruction? You know, if we're going to go by the definitions, the definition of deconstruction is a careful process of breaking something down to its component parts. Careful process, breaking things down, brick by brick, looking at each thing. Destruction is to intentionally destroy something in full. Wash it away. Blow it into the wind. Deconstructing your faith can be a healthy process that allows you to grow in a new direction. But do not confuse it with the destruction of your faith, which looks more like chopping down the entire tree. You know, in the past 12 years, our entire relationship, me and Matt have remodeled 3 houses together. Y'all, we're crazy. But every single one would have kind of a similar process. See, we would find a house, and he bought the first one before we even started dating. If we had been dating yet, I probably would have, like, pulled the plug on it because, woof, that was rough. But we had the similar process. So we'd walk into the house, and we would do a total walkthrough. And we would look at each little detail of the house. And we would decide together what needs to be broken down and taken out and what can stay and be fixed. And then the part that Matt loves the most would come. The part where I would find something else to do that day. Demo day. He loves it. I hate it. I hate looking at something that we just spent money on and watching it get broken down into pieces. It's uncomfortable. It's somewhat painful to see something just get busted up. You know, that's kind of a new thing that people like, you know, have you heard of rage rooms? Where you just like pay money to go into this room and just trash stuff. That sounds kind of fun, but I'm not responsible for cleaning that mess up. So it's an uncomfortable process, but it is necessary for progress. It is necessary to make the house what it should be. So today is kind of a demo day for our faith. So today is kind of an opportunity, and not just today, it's a process. But we need to look at all of the parts of our faith, of our belief, of our worldview, and we need to consider what needs to go and what can stay. You know, does that blue shag carpet and that colorful like floral wallpaper, does that serve a structural purpose? Or is that just a reminder of another time and someone else's preference? Is the Sunday morning dress code a traditional thing? Or is membership foundational to the building of the kingdom? Or is it just a result of generations of organized religion? Do we believe what we do about God and the Bible because it's what we've always been told? Or have we put in the effort personally to establish our own opinions and convictions? Is attending church a social habit? Or is it a sustaining force in your life that connects you to other believers and fuels you and challenges you to grow and go about the rest of your life? You know, questions like these are the beginning of the process of deconstruction. And it can be painful and it can be uncomfortable, but it can also be necessary for the progress, for you to have that foundation, for you to be able to grow your faith. So like I said, I'm sure most of you have grown up with some level of religious influence in your life. And along with that, I'm sure most of you have experienced what's known as church hurt. Whether it's someone that made you feel judged or shamed or condemned, or you've dealt with a leader that was more interested in building their own kingdom than the kingdom of God. Or maybe the church was being used as a way to promote a political agenda or an opinion. You know, I've experienced all of these things. And I'm sure most of you guys can relate to at least one of them. You know, so often it's the failings of people that claim spiritual authority and lead us as spiritual authorities in our lives that cause the destruction of our faith. It's why it's so important in these circumstances to begin the process of deconstruction. You don't have to chop down the tree. You know, I've had so many conversations with college students that they're young adults, and maybe they've grown up in church their whole life. They've lived in their parents' home their whole life. They've had this bubble of influence for their entire life. And then all of a sudden, they're in this new place. They're faced with new experiences, information, relationships, and it doesn't all fit. It's not all compatible with what they have known. And so it causes kind of an earthquake to kind of happen, to kind of shake their foundation. But they're afraid that asking questions means that they have a lack of faith. And so their weak foundation, it kind of starts to crumble a little bit. And the only thing I know to tell them is I encourage them to ask questions. Find someone and walk through this process with them. Ask questions. Question everything. You know, God wouldn't be a very big God if he couldn't stand up to a few questions. Challenge the beliefs you've always had just accepted, just because it's what you've been told, just because it was the way I was raised. You can challenge that. Break down your faith to a bare minimum so you can determine what should stay and what should go. You know, it's uncomfortable, and it can be kind of a dangerous process sometimes. But it's necessary if you really want to know and understand why you believe what you believe. So what was Paul doing in Arabia for 3 years? You know, it wasn't just so he could learn about Jesus or about the Bible or about God. It was also so he could unlearn. See, he was seeking out guidance from God to understand who Jesus was and how his teachings about the kingdom, like what that really meant. But see, he also had to sort through everything that he thought he had known and accepted as truth. See, Paul was not a dumb guy that had no clue what he was talking about. He was a scholar of Hebrew law. He knew the scriptures. He knew them well. This was the history of his people. But now he had to reread it. He had to relearn it with the understanding that it all pointed toward Jesus. See, Pharisees, they were taught that the law was the only way to reach God. But see, now he knew that Jesus had fulfilled the law, and he had to look through all the laws to relearn what that meant, to understand that now it means something a little different. It takes time. But without this process, do you think that he would have been able to speak with authority to the new churches? Would he have been a voice of reason for a new movement? He had to unlearn his worldview in order to make room for God to speak to him. You know, Paul's he's a great example of effective deconstruction because he sorted through all of his beliefs, not just his religious or spiritual beliefs, but he had to consider his cultural beliefs. He had to consider his social beliefs. And he looked to God for guidance on what to keep and what to tear down. You know, if we fail to deconstruct our worldview along with our faith, then we're at risk of rebuilding our faith in the image of society instead of in the image of God. And I don't want to do that because that's going to do nothing for the building of the kingdom. I have some big news for you guys. The Bible was not written with the modern American society in mind. It's shocking, right? It was not written in our context. It was written in the context of the time and the culture that we're reading about. It was a collectivist society, not an individualistic society like we live in. It was completely different. And it will not fit into our worldview. It will not. And because of that, it's so easy for us to take it out of context. And when we take it out of context, we misunderstand it all. It's like Paul reading the laws as the only way to get to God until he knew to add Jesus into that equation. He was just building the Pharisees' kingdom. To rebuild our faith on a firm foundation of biblical truth, we have to understand the context it was written in and that it requires us to break down our worldview. It sounds kind of impossible, right? To like rethink everything that we know. It's kind of a big chore. But I assure you that it's not. If you are open to looking around and seeing things differently, then God will show you things differently. And I will be posting some resources. There's some really great books about this process, about seeing things differently, about how to read the Bible in the right context and all that stuff. I'll be posting some of these resources and some videos and things like that on our Facebook page with the Dive In post this week. But even though we can't do the work for you, we are here to walk alongside you through it. And we're going to be doing a lot of this together throughout the summer. If you'll engage in what we're talking about, what we're learning about, we're going to be breaking down some of these things, that maybe we just haven't really dug into. It's just, you know, communion's just something that we do. But what does it mean? What's it about? Why do we do it? We're going to be looking at some of this basic stuff about what it means to be a Christian. Principles, beliefs, and rituals of the Christian faith. And we're going to be looking at their purpose and their function in the building of the kingdom of God, from blueprint to structure. So I want to encourage you as we go through this process to ask questions, to challenge yourself, and to really just dive into it. You know, there's no shortage of voices in our culture that's offering us opinions that are contrary to the biblical principles that we know. There's more emphasis usually put on being politically correct than on standing firm on spiritual convictions. But without that firm foundation of faith, it is far too easy to let these voices take over. Faith that is not built on a firm foundation cannot withstand the challenges that you will face. And the more we understand why we believe what we believe, the stronger we can stand individually and as a community. So, with that being said, I have some words of caution. I want you guys to learn a little bit from me and Matt's experiences of remodeling houses. So I have a list for you. Number one, demo with the right people. So our second house that we remodeled, we had a friend, and I had a great picture that was from our first house remodel, second phase. We were remodeling our second house, and there was a lot of, like, just walls that were going to have to come down, or, like, paneling and stuff, and sheetrock that was bad. So we have this friend named Andy. He's crazy. First two stories are about him, actually. So I show up one night with pizza, because, like I said, I don't like to do the demo process. And we have one friend, John, that was on a ladder, leaned over. It was a split-level house, and so there were stairs that go down this way. And he was had the ladder on the split level, and he was, like, leaned up over the staircase, and he was, like, banging on something up here. And I'm, like, walk in. I'm, like, nope. And so I just, like, walked around the back of the house. I was, like, I can't look at that. And then I look in the windows down into the basement area, and I see Andy running through the walls, literally, like, just, like, full on, just shoulder, just boom, running through the walls. You got to demo with the right people. Sometimes people are just going to run at the walls, and they're not going to pay attention to what's going on. And at the time, I didn't know if he was even running through the right walls. You got to demo with the right people. Make sure that you are aligning yourself with people that are going to help you break down this process the right way. Use wisdom. So our second Andy story, same house, same day, I think. So we had this basement area, and there was, like, was it like ceiling tiles or something? I don't know. I stayed out of the house until it was ready to put stuff back in. Wood paneling on the ceiling? Oh, yeah, that was weird. So there was, like, paneling on the ceiling. And what Matt found when he started, like, pulling off the paneling and stuff, they hadn't put, like, any stud boards in to, like, brace the paneling. So that it was, like, connected in, like, two ends. And it was ridiculous. But Andy is, like, standing in the middle of this big room. And he goes and he goes to pull down a sheet of paneling. I think I'm telling the story all wrong, but they don't know. Just don't judge me. But the entire ceiling fell down on him. The entire ceiling. Because he didn't make sure that it was braced properly somewhere else. He wasn't quite using wisdom. The guy that runs through walls wasn't using wisdom. Crazy, huh? So you've got to make sure that as you're taking stuff down, that it doesn't all collapse on you. Number three, you gotta be patient. So with our house that we're living in now, when we moved in, or when we bought the house, there was tile in the kitchen, and we were gonna go through, and some of it was messed up and stuff, so we're gonna go through and just bust it all out and then do laminate flooring throughout the house. And we have another friend, Sean. He's a little crazy too. We have some crazy friends, but they're willing to help us work, so. He had a sledgehammer, and I showed up one day, once again with pizza, I think. It's a demo day thing. And this was one of the first times that I've met this friend of ours, and he's in the kitchen, and he's just, like, yelling, and he's just, like, busting out this tile because it was breaking off in tiny little pieces, and it was taking forever, and he was getting so frustrated, and he was just going nuts on it. And I'll never forget how frustrated he was because, one, he wasn't using the right tool. You got to use the right tools. That's another one. I should put that on there. But also, he wasn't taking his time with it. He wasn't doing it in the most methodical way. We have to be patient. This is a process. Sometimes we're going to run into things like tiles that were completely glued down and maybe weren't used the right thing, and so they're not busting up as easily as they should. We're going to come across things that are harder to get out than we expected. So we have to be patient. All right, The next one, accept sound advice. So my dad is a carpenter, and he's been building houses my entire life. And he knows what he's doing with things. Matt's dad is very handy and has been working on projects and stuff like this for most of his life. We learned very quickly that when they gave us advice, that it was from a trusted source and that we could believe it. Because we had relationship with them, we knew that their advice was sound. We knew that we could trust what they were telling us. So we have to find those people that we have through relationship, through their experiences, we can trust what they're saying and we can walk through this with them. We have to be willing to accept sound advice. All right, next. Don't settle for cheap options. In our first house, we thought we were being so clever and saving money by, instead of putting tile in the bathroom floor, we put sticky tiles. Have you guys ever used sticky tiles? Well, if you're wondering what they are, they're in the bathroom here. They aren't made to last. And our first house was built in 1909. So it was old. It wasn't originally built with a bathroom in it. And the bathtub we didn't replace because it seemed fine, but it hadn't been used in years. So we have sticky tiles down on a subfloor, and then we have a bathtub that right after we started using it, it got a crack in it. So water started going through the bottom of the bathtub, soaking into the subfloor, and then all of a sudden we have a big old bubble with our sticky tiles. The cheap option caused us to have to remodel the bathroom a second time. And that's what the picture of us, that was our demo day for the second bathroom remodel. Remember that clearly. It was our 6-month wedding anniversary. Yep, that's how we celebrate things. The next one, don't leave gaps in the foundation. Once again, our first house, it was a wreck. The foundation was not solid. And we found out in the middle of the night one night that a cat had gotten under the house and had kittens. And it didn't take very long for the kittens to start fighting one another, tearing up the ductwork under the house. And it was always in the middle of the night. And pretty soon, our house started smelling like a litter box. And I'm allergic to cats, and I'm sorry if you love cats, but they're not my favorite. I'm a dog person. But I remember one night, in the middle of the night, we couldn't sleep, and Matt got so frustrated that we went out, and he crawls under the house in the crawl space, and he's, like, trying to grab these cats and, like, get them out from under our house and seal up this hole, and he's covered in mud-y stuff. It was gross. And I'm just, like, standing outside, like, holding the flashlight, just holding my breath, like, ugh. It was bad. We had to replace some ductwork. We had to fix things just because there were gaps left in the foundation. If we leave gaps in our foundation of faith, then we may have to go back in later and do some more work. We've got to make sure that foundation is solid. Do your research. In our house now, what I originally wanted to do in, like, the main area of the house was just, like, completely knock down these walls and just, like, have a big open floor plan. And I'm so thankful that my dad came over, looked at the house, and said, "This is a support wall. Don't take it all down." So now we have a post in the middle of our living room area that is holding up the ceiling, or else we would have been like Andy. But you have to know that before you take something out, that it's not going to collapse. You have to know what is a support beam in your faith. And then finally, you've got to find joy in the process. So I can honestly say that these remodeling ventures that we've done has strengthened our relationship. I remember my mom telling me, she was like, "Well, the first year of marriage is hard, but if you're going to remodel a house on top of that, then I'll be praying for you." But you know, it's we found joy in the process. We enjoyed doing it together. And if you find people that you can do it with, that you can deconstruct with, that you can build your faith with, that you can learn and grow with and build the kingdom with, then you will find joy. Because it's a lot better to do it with other people than to try to do it by yourself. So we're going to do one more song. And as we do this song, I want you guys to just take this time and just ask God to begin showing you what needs to be broken down. You know, when we started remodeling our first home, I remember telling my dad that I just couldn't wait to be finished until it was just done. And he kind of sniggered at me and real condescending-like. And he was like, a house is never done. There's always another project. There's always something else to do. And it's the same way with our faith. As we do this, as we begin this process, we've got to recognize that we're always going to have more to do. There's always going to be something else to do, another project. But that's what it takes to build the kingdom. The willingness to let go of the things that don't really need to be there. The courage to try to build what hasn't been. And no matter where you are in this process, I want you guys to just take this time through this song and just worship and just pray and just seek God. Ask Him where you are in your building project. And just really start to consider as you look around the world, like, what did you put there? What did your society put there? What are you allowing God to put there? So just take this time and just worship and just seek God.